Paraphrases the sage's mood as follows. We have answered you, who questioned us in the manner of ordinary discourse, in the same ordinary way. In truth, however, since you are the eternally liberated Father of the Supreme Lord, neither worldly customs nor the injunctions of Scripture have any authority over you. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, the very name Vasudeva indicates that Vasudeva manifests brilliantly, divyati, the super excellent wealth, vasu, or pure devotional service. In the 11th canto, Narada will again meet with Vasudeva and at that time remind him. devashibhutattaminam pitrinam nakin karunayam vinita rajan sarvatmanaya saranam saranyam gato mukundam parihritakartam. O King, one who has given up all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even his forefathers who have passed away. Since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, one who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Text 41. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Kinanjana Salakaya Chakchurum Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamaheyam Dadati Svartanantikam Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yatri patamaham bande sri gurum dinatarinam. Ordinarily, a person is indebted to the sages who distribute the Vedic knowledge, Vedic literature, who instruct us in the processes of karma, jnana and yoga. For the progressive advancement of the human society, there are debts owed to the forefathers. You know, for the facilities that they provide us. Even very simple things like roads, reservoirs and telecommunication systems. I mean, in the modern age anyway, we are, you know, we're using or we're living off of the efforts of others. So in one sense, we owe them a debt. Of course, you know, the modern mentality is we don't owe anybody anything. And then my parents would try to impress upon me my responsibilities, and I said, because, you know, we tend to think selfishly, yes, this has all been provided for me. It's proper, good and proper, that these things have been provided for me. But according to the karmic laws of the creation, we have a responsibility. We have a debt to pay for these facilities that are provided for us. The material body itself is given to us by our parents, provided for us by our parents. And so there's a debt owed there. And there are debts to the demigods who are also providing us with facility. Vasudev, as a learned person, is aware of these points. And so therefore he's asking, how can I be freed? Because his initial question is, how can I be freed that from the reactions of my work? Right? Kindly tell us how the reactions of one's work can be counteracted by further work. This is his question, initial question. Now the thing is that Vasudev actually doesn't owe anybody anything, and neither are there any reactions to his work, because he's a devotee. And not only is he a devotee, but he's a very, very special devotee, because he's Krishna's dad, or his father. Huh? Of course, that creates a problem, because, well, not really a problem, but apparently a paradox or a dilemma, because Vasudev is just thinking of himself as an ordinary person and not very special, which is interesting, because in one sense this is very much the mood of a devotee. Even though a devotee is very highly elevated, even at the beginning stages of devotional service, very highly elevated, in a very highly elevated position, still they think of themselves as not very significant. So this is the level of an advanced devotee. Uttama Adhikari tends to see himself as a fallen or as a low-grade devotee. We discussed this last week. Kanishtha Adhikari tends to think of themselves as the best devotee. I'm the best devotee. And everybody should do what I tell them to do, because I'm the best devotee. And you often see that, you know, Kanishtha Adhikaris will argue over various, you know, very, very minor points of practicing devotional service, just to prove that they're right and that the other person is wrong. Madhyama Adhikari is a little more advanced in that they see themselves as being in a position where they need to take advantage, to benefit from the association of the devotees. And so therefore they make friends with the devotees. So rather than try to prove themselves as being superior, they recognize that they're not in a superior position, but that they need the association of the devotees in order to achieve the superior position. And that superior position is basically to be always engaged in service to Krishna. So Vasudev is demonstrating here a symptom of the highest devotee, in that he's asking the sages, you know, what do I need to do to free myself from the reactions of my karma? Which would be appropriate for an ordinary family man. You know, and that's where these debts come in, these responsibilities for a family man who's caught up in his work and his attachment to his wife and his children and to his possessions and so forth. In order to be free from the reactions of his karma, and in order to, you know, pay off the debts that are owed to the sages, the demigods, the forefathers, then these different activities that are recommended here by the sages etc. are appropriate. Initially, brahmacharya is recommended. Because in a brahmachari ashram, one's mind can be peaceful and focused, not distracted. You know, when you think about it, this is the strategy of the modern day consumer society. They try to distract you from the purpose of life and bewilder us. Buy this, buy that. You'll be happy with this, you'll be happy with that. And they do it in such a way so that basically distract us into thinking that if we have this product or if we can consume this item, then we'll be happy. But the brahmachari is basically recommended to live in a secluded place or in a place where spiritual culture is first and foremost. And the reason for that is so that the study of the Vedic literature can proceed forward in a positive way. Svadhyaya is the study of the Shastra. So in this way one can it's mentioned here, I think, I'm not sure if it was in here or in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, it's mentioned that by studying the Vedas and being celibate brahmachari, then one can pay off the debt to the sages. Because by studying the scripture, then one will know how to act. One will be an upright citizen. One will be will know what's right and what's wrong, what's recommended and what's not recommended. And we'll be able to then act accordingly. And then by getting married and having children and training them also in the same principles and training them and educating them in the principles of brahmachari and studying the shastra, one will then relieve one's debt to the forefathers. But the whole idea of relieving the debt for the forefathers is performing the sacrifices of yajnas that frees them from the reactions of their past sinful activities. Huh? And of course here they're saying, you know, if you're an ordinary person, because Vasudeva is not an ordinary person, so they're saying, you've already paid off the debt to the forefathers. You've already paid off the debt to the sages. Now you just have to pay off your debts to the demigods. If you're an ordinary person, an ordinary man. And Vasudeva is presenting himself as the ordinary person, just like Arjuna presents himself, when I think about it. Arjuna presents himself as an ordinary person on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and asks questions of a simple nature to Krishna. Simple nature. Well, Arjuna is actually not an ordinary person. He's also very elevated. Nitya Siddha, eternal associate of Krishna, just as Vasudeva is. So the sages are saying, you've already paid off those debts, but if there is a debt that you owe, then that debt is can be removed by performing sacrifices to the demigods. But as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out here, that actually this is not necessary for Vasudeva. It's not necessary for him to worry about such things, because he's already achieved the whole purpose of brahmachari, study of the scripture, householder life, performing sacrifices, giving in charity, all these different activities. They're recommended for everybody, in fact. And it's interesting because Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee acts for the purpose of purification. Pretty much. A devotee's activities are not performed, a pure devotee, or shall we say an advanced devotee, performs their activities not with any goal in mind. Right? And we're studying this in the Bhagavad Gita at the moment, because Bhagavad Gita is really it's a theme, common theme, a persistent theme in the Bhagavad Gita is material things are not worth pursuing. Why not? Because they're limited and temporary. And any happiness derived from material things will only lead to distress. We discussed this the other day. Basically, this is something that we have to, it's recommended that we, you know, imprint this indelibly in our consciousness. Material happiness equals misery. I don't want to disappoint anybody, but this is a fact. So devotees know that material happiness, hang on a second, it's a dud. But that's not what I'm interested in, because it just brings me grief. Sooner or later. That's what Krishna says. So therefore, why should I act then? So it's recommended, and this is what the sages are recommending also, but actually it's recommended for everybody, that one should act for purification. Even for the advanced devotees. That's what Vasudeva is doing. He's a very advanced devotee. He's already performed austerities in previous lifetime for, you know, 10,000 years or something, just eating leaves and breathing the air. He and his wife, Prishni and Sutapa, isn't it? It's described in the Krishna book. Anyway, he's highly qualified. Devotee, already liberated. But the devotees act in a way that sets an example for others, right? And it's the activities are performed for their purification. It mentions in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned how, you know, acts of sacrifice, austerity, penance, charity, all of these things should never be given up. Because the devotees, even if they're liberated, they engage in these activities for further purification. Right? Especially when you think about it, you know, we're living in a very contaminated atmosphere. And so therefore, we need to keep ourselves in a purified condition, always. The material energy has this two potencies. There's the avranatmika and the prakshekpatmika. There's the covering potency that covers everybody and makes them think, you know, I am this body. The avranatmika, the covering potency of Maya, makes everybody think, yeah, I'm happy where I am. But for those who realize, hang on a second, I'm not happy where I am, and they try to get out of that situation, then Maya has a pulling down potency. And that's actually specially designed for devotees, that one is, especially for the devotees. So, advanced or not, it's recommended that one engage in these activities of penance, charity, austerity, sacrifice for purification. And of course that's what Vasudeva is doing. He wants to, you know, he's feeling himself unqualified, and so he's inquiring from the sages. But the sages are saying, hang on a second, Krishna's your son. You're his eternal servant. There's no need for you to do any of these things. But still, just to set an example, he's inquiring as if an ordinary person. As if an ordinary person. But really, this underlines the point that a devotee is not an ordinary person. A devotee is not an ordinary person. It's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, all of the purposes that are served by the small ponds are delivered by a huge reservoir of water. So the different sacrifices and penances and austerities and giving in charity and all of these different activities that are recommended within the Vedas as different forms of sacrifice, which ultimately for the purification of the living entity and ultimately bring them to transcendental knowledge, spiritual knowledge, which means, you know, they realize that I'm actually a servant of Krishna. All of those activities, the results of those activities can be performed when one simply surrenders to Krishna. Krishna is like the reservoir. And it's mentioned in the, you know, it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, Vedais Chasavaya Rahan Eva Vidya Vedanta Krit Veda Vid Eva Chaham. That the whole purpose of studying the Vedas and learning all these ritualistic performances, sacrifices, penances, austerities, the yoga system, all of these activities are actually meant to know Krishna. That's the whole purpose. The whole purpose of all of these activities is to bring us to the point of purification, elevate us to the point of surrendering to Krishna. Bahunam jammanam mante jnanamam prapanjate vasudeva savamiti sa mahatma sudulabha. So, such a surrendered person who understands this point, that actually the purpose of existence is to act in my constitutional position, to act in my as who I am, who I really am, is rarely achieved. It's a special position, actually. So, and in that position, when a devotee surrenders to Krishna, then, as it's mentioned here, devarshi bhutakta minam pitrinam. So, devarshi means the demigods, bhutakta means the other living entities, minam pitrinam, the forefathers. What does minam mean? Is it? The debt. So the debts that we have to all of these personalities. For the devotee, I don't hear that. This is all the demigods, the great sages, the ordinary living beings, the relatives, friends, mankind, forefathers. When one surrenders to Krishna, then all of the debts that one, all of the material duties that one has, would ordinarily be responsible for, are taken care of when one serves Krishna. Since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, one who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately. Now that doesn't mean that we can just do what we like, mind you. Right? You know, right now I'm a devotee, I don't have to pay my taxes, I don't have to stop at the stop sign. I can be rude to people if I want to be. I'm a devotee. Because we see here, even in the example of Vasudeva, even though he doesn't have to do these things, still he does it to set the example. But the fact is that the devotees, once they take the path of devotional service, then all of these responsibilities are relinquished, they're given up. And one is not obliged to perform these different sacrifices. Because The purpose of performing the sacrifice is to come to this point of devotional service. To be active in Krishna's service is the perfection of existence. It is the goal of our lives. Even we may not have a full realization of our position in devotional service. And that's not unreasonable, because here we see Vasudev. He's a very, very advanced devotee, and he's demonstrating his feelings of inadequacy. It's not unusual for the devotees to feel as if they're not very advanced. They haven't made any progress. But Prabhupada gives the example that devotional service is like a mango. In a beginning state, it may be green, and so therefore, you know, sour, not palatable. In one sense, it doesn't taste so good. But it's still a mango. And even when you think about it, you know, green mangoes have their, you can make some nice things out of green mangoes. Huh? Nice pickle. Even. But it's still a mango. And of course, as one follows the process of devotional service and becomes far more purified, then the practice of devotional service becomes sweeter and sweeter. As one makes progress and as one clears away the material perception or the material conception of life, and as one makes progress. That's one of the reasons why the devotees keep themselves engaged in these activities of purification. Jagya, actually sacrifice, is recommended to be performed especially for the devotees. But that sacrifice is not to be relieved of one's material karmas, or to pursue, you know, the heavenly realm, or to get a better material facility. It's not the purpose of the sacrifice. The sacrifice of the devotees is for purification, so that one can be more and more bound up in one's relationship with the devotees, and ultimately with Krishna. Because in order to come closer to Krishna, one actually has to come closer to Krishna's devotees. Especially in the Kali Yuga. That's the challenge for us. In previous ages, you know, as Madhusudana was mentioning yesterday, you know, you could meditate by yourself for tens of thousands of years and get to see the supreme, the super soul, perfect your devotional service in that way. But in the Kali Yuga, devotional service is perfected in the association of the devotees. That is a sacrifice in and of itself. Just to live with others and to engage in this Sankirtan mission. Jagyoye Sankirtan Faye Yujanti Hi Sumedha Saha. This is the sacrifice that is recommended in this day and age to mature our unripened devotional service into sweet and juicy devotional activities that actually have a taste. Because in order to get to that point, we have to remove the anattas, attachments to unwanted things. And the performance of the Sankirtan Jagya is the fire in which these unwanted things are burnt up. The anattas, the unwanted attachments are actually burnt up by the fire of the sacrifice of the Sankirtan Jagya. Very special. It looks like an ordinary activity, It appears as if the devotees are doing very, very similar things to those of the Karmis. As Prabhupada says, you know, we have a life of recreation. Huh? One of the devotees asked Prabhupada, what's our recreation? Prabhupada says, dancing. Singing and dancing. Who doesn't like to do that? I mean, how much money do you have to pay to go into, you know, well, I don't even know what the names of the nightclubs are these days. The Dungeon. Whatever. You have to pay to go to these places to dance. But with the devotees, you don't have to pay anything. This is our recreation. They're taking prasadam. It appears to be ordinary activities, but taking prasadam is a transcendental activity. You know, practically speaking, it's in theory, you could eat your way back home, back to Godhead. In theory. Jivago. We begin the process of devotional service by eating. Well, very often that's one of the first stages of devotional service that we become very enthusiastic about. Thank you, prasadam. But actually it's very elevated, even though it looks like an ordinary activity, dancing and eating. It is not. It is a very elevated practice. The practice of devotional service, rising early in the morning and worshipping Krishna, worshipping the spiritual master, Mangal Aarti, chanting japa, all of these activities elevate us to the highest platform, to the pinnacle of all achievements that are recommended in the Vedas, the sacrifices, the penances, the austerities. All of these activities are meant to bring us ultimately to this point of being engaged in devotional service. And as a result of being engaged in devotional service, then Krishna reveals everything to the devotee. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Desham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvatam Dadami Buddhi Yogamtam Jaina Mama Bhayantite. Krishna says that to those who are constantly engaged. And this is a characteristic of a devotee, is they remain constantly engaged in devotional service. And especially for the neophyte or for the beginning devotee, that means following the regulative principles, the basic practices. And it's action, even in the yoga system. There are yama, niyama, it's mentioned in the, we'll discuss it today in the Bhakti Shastri. There's the yoga ruruksha stage, which is basically the stage of rules and regulations and engagement in work. And Prabhupada says actually, you know, this is the mystery, this is the secret of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is encouraging Arjuna to be a yogi, right? Tasmat, was it Tasmat Yogi Bhavarjuna? Prabhupada calls this. He wants Arjuna to be a yogi, but we don't ever see Arjuna just sitting down and meditating. You don't see Arjuna at any time sitting down in the forest and just meditating. So what kind of a yogi is he? And of course, Krishna explains, yoginam api sarvesham, same as Vasudeva as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're always the highest yogi, the topmost yogi. Yoginam, matkatena antaratmana, sradavam bhajate yomam same yuktakamo mataha. It's my opinion, Krishna says, that the highest yogi is one who is always thinking of me. Matkatena antaratmana. Sradhaman, who is full of faith. Bhajate yo man, who worships me, or who serves me, basically. He's the highest devotee. So, even at the neophyte stage, or certainly at the neophyte stage, but in any stage, the devotee is actively engaged in devotional service. You know, at a very elevated stage, when one has learned to control the mind and the senses, this is why the regulated principles are there. The regulated principles of devotional service are there to control the mind and the senses and focus them on Krishna. And their activities basically determined by the spiritual master. Or in our case, by Rupa Goswami. If we have a debt to the sages, then we have a debt to personalities like Prabhupada, we have a debt to personalities like Rupa Goswami, who are acting as our gurus. And we say this prayer, Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale. We offer our respects to Rupa Goswami because Rupa Goswami understood the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he established Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, and we find that in the Nectar of Devotion. What's the mission? The mission is Ado Guru Parashraya. First of all, take shelter of the Guru. Then what do? Follow his instructions. Huh? Do what he tells you to do. This is the beginning of devotional service. Which means accepting some things, giving up other things. Engaging in the, you know, the 64 items of devotional service. And of course those 64 items of devotional service are practical engagements to keep the mind and the senses under control. So therefore we see with Arjuna, you know, he wasn't a yogi as such, but he was active. But he was the highest of yogis because he was always thinking of Krishna. So when we're working and serving, we're doing things for Krishna, then automatically we'll be thinking of Krishna. This is the whole, this is the secret. Prabhupada says this is the secret of the Bhagavad Gita. Serve Krishna and then you'll automatically think of Krishna. If you're not automatically thinking of Krishna, then chant your rounds better. But automatically we should be thinking of Krishna. Prabhupada says, you know, we're going out and distributing books. Whose books? They're Krishna's books. We're going out and collecting money for who? For Krishna. Of course, if we're going out and collecting it for ourselves, then we're in trouble. Even a householder is recommended to think that his work is being done for Krishna's pleasure. But of course, that needs to be demonstrated. Then at the end of the week, he needs to give it to Krishna. So therefore, you know, the sacrifice for the householders is recommended, give 50% of your income to Krishna. Then you really are thinking of Krishna. Krishna! Krishna! But then you're depending on Krishna. Huh? This is a sacrifice. Sacrifice, austerities, penance, charity, these are all recommended for everybody. What for? For purification. Because what happens? If we hang on to it for ourselves, if we're doing these things with some selfish motivation, first of all, if it's a material thing that we're after, we're only going to get what?
Misery.
Misery. Right, that's the first rule we have to remember. Material happiness means misery. We have to remember that. Because it's, and you know, it's amazing. We, what was I saying? You know, the consumer society is designed in such a way as to fool us into thinking, yeah, I can be happy. I can be happy. One of the reasons why they don't want people to get too serious about spiritual life. Right? Because then they'll stop buying all of the junk that they're selling us. And then they won't make their profits. But the devotees have to engage in this process of sacrifice. Which means basically controlling the mind and the senses and bringing it focused on Krishna. That's why we get up early in the morning and we chant Hare Krishna, to bring our minds focused on Krishna so that throughout the rest of the day it's easy to remember Krishna and not be too attached to things that we think are mine. Right? The body is actually trying to think, yeah, this actually, everything belongs to Krishna. I'm Krishna's, even. Now, for a devotee who thinks like that, then Krishna becomes the possession of the devotee. Interesting. You know, when a devotee has that kind of a mentality, then he's thinking, oh, Krishna's with me. I've got Krishna. This is called mamata. A mood of, you know, very intimate feeling or relationship with Krishna. And that, for the devotee, is the most valuable thing. That's more valuable than all of the material things that he could hope to achieve in the material world. To have that special affection and care being shown to them by Krishna, and that's what happens. For the devotee, Krishna shows great care and affection for his devotees. He reveals himself, and he reveals what's going on around us. Tesham evana kampata mahamma jnana jamtamaha nasyam yatma bhavasto jnana dipena bhasvata. Krishna says that I, dwelling within the heart of my devotee, feeling compassion for him, destroy the darkness of ignorance with the light of transcendental knowledge. So for one who's always engaged in devotional service, Krishna reveals how that devotee can come to him. Krishna reveals himself and dissipates the darkness of ignorance. But the devotee has to keep that, you know, that sense of Krishna consciousness. We have to keep Krishna in the center. So Prabhupada says, central point is Krishna. We tend to keep central point is me. That, what is it? WIIFM. That's the radio station that we're tuned into. You know what WIIFM stands for? What's in it for me? That's our radio. That's what we're tuned into. WIIFM. What's in it for me? But the only problem with that is that that may, if we're not careful, or not, actually guaranteed, if we're not careful, that will stop us from actually being able to tune into Krishna, or Krishna being able to tune into us, because we're off on some other wavelength, moving in some other direction. So the devotees are, it's always recommended for the devotees to understand this, the realities about material existence and material pursuits, and then and the reality of engaging in the sacrifice of devotional service, especially the Sankirtan Jagya. And of course that means so many things for us. There's so many engagements, so many activities that each one of us can find something to do in Krishna's service that can dovetail our natural propensities to act and to work. But for our ultimate purification and for ultimately Krishna's pleasure, because we may come to the point one day where we don't have to perform sacrifice. On the fully purified platform where the mind and the senses are completely under control and all we do is think of Krishna. Huh? We may come to that stage. Which is, you know, the stage that the devotees like Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaja and Yashoda and all they can. The residents of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani, the cowherd boys, all they can do is think of Krishna. Yet, still, they do devotional service. Huh? We may come to that point. The whole purpose of the yoga system even the process of devotional service is to bring us to this point of always, incessantly, constantly thinking of Krishna. But even then, those devotees who are on that platform, they still, the Uddamadikara still comes down, as Prabhupada demonstrated and taught, still come to the Madhyam platform to preach. That's the position of safety in the Kali Yuga recommended. You know, we can measure the efficacy of our devotional service in various ways, but it's usually measured through practical engagement in devotional service. That's our, Prabhupada says, practical samadhi. Practical samadhi. By accepting a superior dictation. That superior dictation is either being directed personally by the super soul, but if we're not being directly, if we're not being personally directed by the super soul, then we go for next best. Being directed by the spiritual master. He's the representative of the super soul. Being directed by the shastra. Being directed by the sadhus or the saintly devotees. This is really missing, isn't it, actually, Prabhupada was saying. We need the association of the devotees, especially to be effective. And one of the reasons why we associate with the devotees is because the devotees cut our attachments. Well, their sharpened words cut our attachments to the material energy, to material nature, to material activities. This is why people fear the sadhus, actually. And hang around with those guys. So they'll cut your association with material energy, and we don't like that. Well, I prefer you're being too heavy. Can't you be a little nicer? Well, unfortunately, the Bhagavatam recommends that we associate with the sadhus. Why? Because they'll cut our attachment. The guru cuts our attachment. The shastra also cuts our attachment to the material world. And in return, we get something which is much, 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 much better. Much better. Devotional service to Krishna is much, much better than anything material. The material things are temporary, limited, and ultimately bring us distress. And we're looking for something. We're looking for happiness which is permanent and lasting. So we'll only get that by devotional service. That's the only way we can get it. And we get that by staying in the association of the devotees. By accepting dictation from a superior. That's our system. That's a sacrifice. You know, we basically want to do what we want to do. I want to do what I want to do. Don't tell me what to do. Who are you, anyway? I want to do what I want to do. That's dangerous, actually. That kind of mentality is actually a danger signal. When you start thinking, I want to do what I want to do. Why don't you look after me? Huh? That's that radio station again. But when we put ourselves under superior dictation, that means either the super soul or the super soul's representatives. That's why it's hard, because that means we have to associate with the devotees. And that isn't always easy to subjugate, to become a servant, basically. Become a servant of the devotees. And in a meaningful way, so that we all make progress in devotional service. And also fulfill the mission of Rupa Goswami, which ultimately means fulfilling the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which ultimately for us, you know, simply put, means following Prabhupada. Actually, that's what it all boils down to. So that's our sacrifice. Vasudeva is performing a sacrifice under the guidance, actually with the help and assistance of the sages here. And we make our purification and spiritual advancement by performing the Sankirtan Jagya in the association of the sadhus, in the association of the devotees. And see, the thing is, the sadhus means sat. They're interested in the permanent. Materialistic persons are interested in the asat, the temporary. That's why we avoid that association, because that's like, you know, Prabhupada mentions, chasing after the asat is basically just madness. It's just madness. But chasing after Krishna, that's sanity. And that's achieved in the association of those who are interested in the sat, not the asat. Alright, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
It seems like in the initial stages of devotional service, we always take our instructions from without. We're talking about taking instructions from supersoul.
Yeah.
It seems a very dangerous position. Just like we see so many crazy people in the world, and they say, yeah, I've been told to do this.
There's a man who killed John Lennon, said that.
It seems like the only safe position in it, at least for quite some time in personal service, is always expect that instruction from without.
Yep. And the right person too. The right people. And, you know, ideally we structure our communities in such a way so that the devotees who are in positions of responsibility and who are instructing the devotees are actually giving them guidance that will help them make spiritual advancement. But otherwise, if we try to take shelter of the super soul and we're not purified, then all we're going to be doing is taking shelter of their mind. Right? Because this is the point in the sixth chapter, Krishna says, you know, if you control the mind, then automatically you are connected to the super soul. If you're not purified by the process of devotional service, then basically you're just listening to the mind. And then that could mean any, you know, thing. And even sometimes, you know, we have a situation where devotees say, oh, no, but my guru told me to do this, but usually it's their smart on what their guru told them. They just use the guru as a way, stay away from me, don't tell me what to do, but my guru told me what to do. You can tell me what to do. This is a common phenomenon in this country. Of course, you know, we should follow the order of our spiritual master, but usually that's going to be in cooperation with the rest of the devotees. That's how it works. We can be selective, which is just basically the mental platform. Hang on, I don't want to do this. But as a fact, there are people who've done all sorts of atrocities and have justified it by saying, well, this is what God wanted me to do. It's going on even today in the name of different religious traditions.
That's a question, a preemptive mind question that I was going to ask about the motivation and self-interest.
Yes.
Connected, put Krishna in the center.
Yeah.
Dilutes the whole proposition. One had been thinking about putting Krishna in the center and trying to remember him as much as possible and being conscious of him. At the same time, the mind takes control of that way and puts self-interest there and hence creates a path how to link that together. So the motivation of remembering Krishna is not devotion but the self-interest.
Self-interest.
Yes. And that self-interest is not motivated.
Well, that's very strong in people, because why do many people go to church? They pray to God. Help me. Get this, get that, get another thing. Right? They go to church and they pray. Give us this day.
And then a bit.
You know, whatever it is that we want. not just our daily bread. Let me be successful in this, let me be successful in that. Effort, endeavour. Whereas, you know, what we have to learn is that in acting in our service relationship with Krishna, that's actually the best position for us. That's our real self-interest. And that Krishna will satisfy all of our needs and requirements in ways that we couldn't even imagine if we act on that platform. It's a fact, our selfish interests can be manifest in devotional service. In fact, they are. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the instructions that devotees, especially when they're trying to pay Krishna, they should protect their devotional service with a fence around it. Right? So that fence is to keep materialistic people out. Right? But and also that they should avoid the mad elephant offence, because you know you can keep your devotional garden with a fence around it to keep materialistic people out, but if you yourself have a materialistic mentality and criticise the devotees, then that's just like having an elephant in your garden. Okay. And everybody knows what an elephant does to a garden. They just destroy it. So assuming that we keep the mad elephant out and also the materialistic association, then while we're watering our garden, what happens is that along with the devotional creeper that we want to cultivate, there are also going to be weeds. Those weeds are our material attachment. Material attachments. One of the problems with some of these weeds is they look exactly like the bhakti lata. They look exactly like the creeper of devotion. So, you know, we can be engaged externally. It appears as if we're engaged in devotional service, but we're actually doing the devotional service so that we can get something out of it. You know, like, for example, as a temple president, you could be acting in such a way so that everybody tells you, you know, you do your devotional service, everybody tells you what a wonderful person you are. They don't do that. You could be doing, you know, you could be doing it because people will, you know, put a mat out for you when you sit down. Or whatever. Different things. And in fact, actually, in the Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur, it mentions that actually there are weeds or there are obstacles that arise as a result of the performance of devotional service. Right? Because when you become a devotee, then people start doing things for you. Right? They'll give you money. They'll give you a big seat. They'll tell you what a wonderful guy you are. Guru Maharaj, you're wonderful, you're this, you're that. And that's very dangerous, actually. Those things are super dangerous for a devotee. It looks like he's engaged in devotional service. He's a big guru sitting on a seat. This is why Bhakti Siddhanta says when he tackles him, you know, actually, he's just a big monkey. If he accepts that praise and glorification and thinks that that's what he is, he's no better than a monkey or an ass. Right? Because not those things. Actually, he's just a Actually, when Prabhupada mentions it, actually, you know, we might think the President of the United States is a big man who's telling everybody what to do, but actually, he's a servant of the rest of the citizens of the country. But when he gets carried away thinking, yeah, I'm a big fellow around here, everybody does what I tell him to do, that's when he's in trouble. So, you know, when we engage in the process of devotional service, our activities appear like they're devotional service, but we're actually doing it for ourselves. It's like cooking an offering and thinking, yeah, I'm the offering, I'll stash a bit of this. Now, this is an example. Well, you know, the devotee who's cooking the offering, and then Ginger Rivers cooking the offering and all of a sudden there's all these devotees appearing. Woo! What are you up to? And Ginger Rivers says, mind your own business. Get out of here. Right? As an example. So, you know, we have this post to perform the devotional service for Krishna, free from these personal motivations. Right? When we bring in, I said that Mahaprabhu says, that's why when we chant Hare Krishna, one of the processes, the clearing stage, is to identify these weeds and then to pull them out and throw them away as much as possible. That's the clearing stage of japa, of chanting Hare Krishna, is when these material desires come up and we have to recognize them instead of cultivating, because when we chant Hare Krishna, that's like pouring water under the devotional creeper. But it's also, if we've got attachments, we're also pouring water under the weeds. And we could be, and if the weeds look like devotional service, it's a bit tricky. We could be, externally it appears as if we're engaging in devotional service, but actually we've got our devotional creeper getting all choked up. Because we've got all these weeds growing around it. Huh? That's our personal motivations. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, keep out the dualistic association because they'll definitely encourage you to grow weeds. Avoid the mad elephant offence because that'll root up everything. And when you're chanting Hare Krishna, try to weed out these unwanted motivations, unwanted desires, because they'll also choke up the creep of devotional service. And you see that, you know, that means we've been chanting Hare Krishna for so many years, but we're still walking around with a long face. Why isn't Krishna looking after me? All these devotees picking on me, telling me what to do. And I'm not getting looked after. So, we have to be, this is one of the hardest practices in devotional service, is to keep internally focused and keep our relationship with Krishna fresh and vibrant and invigorated by devotional service, rather than always, you know, introspective and self-absorbed. And, you know, it's really unfortunate, but actually we come from a culture where we're taught to be self-absorbed. When you think about it, we come from a culture, so it's very hard to break out of that habit. Oh, what about me? You have to actually break out of that habit. It's hard to break out of that habit, especially Western culture. It just trains you.
Think about yourself. Just do it for yourself.
Be yourself. I remember when the devotees asked me to go out on Sankirtan, and my biggest concern was, well, who's going to throw out the rubbish? who's going to wash the prasadam room floor? Who's going to do that? Because I've been doing that for, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 months. And actually, all the time while I was doing it, I said, when's the new bucket going to come along? Oh, I did all day long, there's mop the floors and throw out the rubbish and do the pots. And, you know, a couple of new buckets have come along and then they go and do something else. Well, that's not fair. I reckon most guys got to do those jobs and I'm still cleaning the floors. And the advisor would say, yeah, you know, when you get to go out on Sankirtan, that's a really, you know, that's a really big responsibility. That's the, you know, that's the pinnacle of all achievements. So yet when I was going out on Sankirtan, I said, well, hang on a second, who's going to do the prasadam room floor? So in one sense, you know, if we have that kind of responsibility, if we have that sense of ownership of our service, that's actually good. And it's on another level also when I think about it, because one of the things that we notice is that the householders will come to the pot shed and they'll just take the ghee buckets. They don't ask anybody, they just pinch the ghee buckets. Somebody I know was complaining about this fact. Well, in one sense it's good, because it means that the temple belongs to them. Right? They see the temple as belonging to them. So that's good. Ownership, Prabhupada says, that what is it? That the servant I forgot what, if he steals something from his master, then that's that means he really feels some connection with his master. there's a sense of ownership. Because we have to be careful about that. there's the story about the disciple who was spending all of his guru's money. And the guru was asking, where did all this come from? He says, you're a creeper. You're a creeper, Guru Maharaj. Guru creeper. But ownership, yes, Adrian's group on Thursday, Isra Vasyam Nidam Savam Yakit Jagatam Jagat Tena Chaktena Bunjita Magvita Kasis Vidyanam. That everything animate or inanimate within the creation is owned and controlled by the Lord. He's the Isha, or the controller. But however, He gives each one of us our quota, our facility that we can use, and even Krishna will respect. That's yours. Krishna's not a. It's not like Krishna's going to come along and say, hey, how come you got that watch? That's mine, give it to me. But if Krishna's given that to you, then that's yours, and he'll recognize and acknowledge that's yours. You're using that in my service? Okay, fine, that's yours. In fact, Krishna happily gives facility to the devotees. He's not attached to it in any case. If he wants a fancy watch or a big car or whatever it is that he wants, whatever he wants, he just has to think, I want that. And boom, there it is. And also, Prabhupada gave the example of the watch. Again, the watch, This is my watch. Okay, it belongs to Krishna, but this is my watch. If you try to take it off me, I'll fight you for it. Right? Because I'm using, it's been given to me and I'm using it in Krishna's service. So therefore, I can have ownership of that item, of that facility, because I'm using it in Krishna's service. So yes, it does belong to Krishna, but it's been put under my custody. So having ownership, especially having ownership of the service, is good, because that means then the person will take responsibility for it, they'll make sure that it gets done. You see that when devotees make a little bit of an answer, there's a couple of ways they deal with their service. A situation might arise where they can't do their service. So what do? They ring up the temple commander and say, I can't do my service, you have to arrange it for me. Well, the way it makes a little bit more advancement, they say, Prabhu, I'm sorry I have to go away for the week, but what I've done, I've arranged my service in such a way, so this person is doing it, that person is doing this one, and the other person is doing that. Is that okay? I've covered it all for you. So they have a sense of responsibility for their service, and making sure that it gets done, and they don't just go, you can sort it out. So ownership is, I would suggest, is a good thing of our services. Otherwise, you just don't care about anything. But Prabhupada showed how much he cared. In Mayapur, he saw a dripping tap, and he said to Bhavananda and Jabhatakan, then both Maharaj said, who's responsible for this? Right? Who's responsible for this? Prabhupada took responsibility for the whole of ISKCON, right? So we saw a leaking tap. So okay, I'm responsible for this, but who have I put in charge? Now you're responsible for it, fix it up. Otherwise, you know, the tendency will be, it's just something they gave you to do, and how you can do it. That's not very, that's impersonal actually when you think about it. But personal means, and in fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that a devotee should accept their service as if Krishna has given it to them personally. Right? That's how when a devotee, because I remember when I first started coming to the temple, we all used to sit down, because we still do sit down, and we get served prasadam. And then I thought, wow, I'd really like to serve out. And I wanted to get up and serve out, and the guy said, no, sit down. And then one day, the devotees asked me to serve out. I thought, fantastic, now I've got an opportunity to serve out. I didn't always think like that, but certainly when I was a very, very young devotee, the opportunity to serve the devotees, because, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, all of the devotees are like Paramahamsas, with these effulgences of, they're all pure devotees. Whenever they ask you to do something, it's like, wow, yeah, this is really special, I've got to do some devotional service. And getting an opportunity to serve the devotees is like, it's very special for me. It's like, wow, this is such a great opportunity, I get to give prasadam to the devotees. Right. After a few months, I was like, can you say that? Oh, no, I don't have to do that again. But actually, serving the devotees is serving Krishna's representatives. And Krishna says, if you serve my devotees, that's better than serving me. Amazing. Right? Krishna says, if you want to serve me, then the devotee who is actually my devotee, he's the one who's serving the devotees. That's my devotee. Not the one who says he's my servant, the one who says he's a servant of a servant. So Krishna actually likes it when the devotees take, ownership of their service, and especially if the service has been given to them by another devotee. He likes that. He actually appreciates that mood of devotion, because the person who takes on that responsibility is thinking, yes, actually, this is what Krishna wants me to do. And yet we get the kind of question, you don't want to be like a rock star. You don't want people telling you what to do. You get that? You don't want to be told what to do by the devotees. Now that's the opposite. That's totally the opposite of what Krishna says. Huh? Totally the opposite. So it's my surmise, my speculation, if you like, based on hearing from authorities, that Krishna likes us to take ownership of our service that we do. He likes that. He'll reciprocate with somebody who has taken the time and the care and the thought to actually do their service in a very personal way, thinking, yes, I'm doing this to please Krishna.
Yes.
He's got a sign to
sign. What's the question? Let's see the question first. What's the question?
In the beginning of your lecture, you said that there were shivas of Sankaran sitting on that guy and serving the Lord, he's not in the reference from fathers and his people. So, this said that actually, this. One of the purposes that Arjuna gives the reason that if I kill all these people, they cannot perform the temple, like I said, and all these Madhavasama rituals of performing Pindha Kriya, all this, purposes of walking water periodically.
Mm-hmm.
Then in that purpose, Prabhupada gives the leadership of Sankarana.
Yeah.
So, at what level of advancement Can we see that, like, you know, if we do the service, then we know we are not being direct to any of this? Like you said, that if we do service to the Lord, surrender to the Lord completely, then we are not indebted to anybody. But at what level of advancement can we see that stage, like, you know, we don't have to do these things on national issues, but only even the level of advancement?
Well, here's the thing. We can do those things in a mood of devotion. And so even we can be serving our parents respectfully, but in a way that encourages them to come to Krishna consciousness. So, you know, the level of advancement is how much we connect everything to devotional service. If we're fully engaged in devotional service, then we don't have to worry too much about those things. But even if we feel we have an obligation to our family members, which is not bad, right? So we don't ignore our mum and dad. But then what do? We give them prasadam, we give them Prabhupada's books, we give them devotional associations, we might even preach to them.
It's not like that. Like, for example, if somebody has lost father and mother, both are not there, they have, like, forgot their bodies. So
yeah.
In that situation, like, performing the Varnasana oriented...
We don't have to. We don't have to. If we're chanting 16 rounds, following the regulated principles and doing devotional service, then we don't have to do any of those things.
Mm.
We don't have to.
Mm.
We don't have to go to Gaya and be the pinda for our forefathers.
Mm.
It's mentioned that Prahlad Maharaj saved 10 generations forwards and 10 generations backwards in his family by being a pure devotee. So, you know, we shouldn't underestimate the potency of devotional service. And, you know, how do we measure whether our devotional service is pure or not? I wouldn't bother. Just keep doing it. It will become pure. The activity is pure. Our head may be jumbled up with all sorts of stuff. But just keep doing the service. And the service will purify us gradually. And, you know, we don't have to worry about all this. You know, even for the devotees, we don't have to follow all of the samskaras. We don't have to. We do, though, to set an example, and also because we're not totally, but for a pure Vaishnava, then these things are all unnecessary. Because he's already gotten to the point where he needs to get to. Alright, Vandrasimha Bhagavatam ki jai.
Jai.